don't take any bullshit from him.
Why don't you go back to New York, you wop bastard?
You call this Big Market Radio?
This is the most disgusting program. I urge everyone to complain to this station.
Why don't you go back to Cuba, you sick bastard? Why don't you go back to Cuba, you sick bastard? Why don't you go back to Canada, you Jew bastard?
Well, you say, why do you do it? You know, you say, why does he do it? Why does he do it? Name for me another thing I could be doing right now. Having more fun, bringing me more delight and enjoyment than this ass show. Right here, right now. Yeah, baby. They're not sending me to the Super Bowl this year, are they? You know, this is very important, this thing I'm looking for. I don't want to have to ad-lib this one. It's here. I know. We have it. We have it. We have it right here. We have his sworn testimony. Oh, Dino. You know, I tell you, I can be one stupid son of a bitch sometimes. I really can. That's it. Gotta find it. Well, at least the music is pretty groovy. I can't find it. Oh, yeah. All right, that's the end of the song. So we're back, hour two. It's 5 minutes after the hour. The Patrick Ryan Show with me, Dino, on patrickryanshow.com and the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm here, but David Duke is not here. No, hold on. Stop. I heard that. I heard it. I'm more disappointed than any of y'all, all right? I'm more disappointed than any of you. But there's a reason. Hold on a second. Turn on my phone here. And I'll read you the text that David sent to me. Let's hear. That's to do something with disavowing of my methods and the way I go about my business. Hold on a second here. All right, here it is. Under Dr. D on my phone. All right. So here... Here's what it says. He says, Dino, I cannot align myself with someone who holds the extreme views that you do and will not be party to your hate-based radio show. All right, here's what he really said. Okay, he says, I talked to Dr. Patrick Slattery, and he would be happy to go on your show. Well, he's been on my show before, Dave. If you'd like, he's really good. He's funny and interesting. He'll talk about any subject you want, including the subjects that we talk about. Oh, so he'll come on the show now? All right, and here's the first... Hold on a second. Here's the first message that David sent me. Patrick, I forgot all about the fact that I have the Jeff French show. Who the fuck is Jeff French? Can we find out? I'll throw Duke's ass off my show, never to appear again, if he's not careful. What do you think he's fucking with here? It's a joke, baby. Jeff French. Every month on the first Wednesday of the month, go on, do that show, same time as your show. I'm so sorry. I mean, that's my network. Please accept my apology. No, not accepting your apology, David. Sincerely apologize. Let's do the show again very soon. Sorry about that. I know that you're one person that can talk on your own, so at least that's good. Thanks, man. Call me soon. I'm also sorry. Right, then he sends me a follow-up saying that his Dr. Patrick Slattery, who's previously been on the show, wants to come on. Really? All right. Well, you know, sometimes you got to roll with the punches, folks. You got to roll with the punches. Okay, so why don't we get... Yeah, we'll get Patrick Slot, Dr. Patrick and Patrick for hour two here. That's fine. Okay, we'll get the Dr. Patrick Slattery on the show. That's fun to know. That's fine with me. That's fine. I have no problem with that at all. Hold on, though. I wasn't ready for this. You've got to adjust, folks. Things don't always... Listen, life is not a straight line all the time. Huh? There's road bumps and tolls and accidents ahead and inclement weather. You know, and sometimes the lights on the way to town aren't all green. Deal with shit the best you can. That's what you got to do. You know? All right, hold on a second now. All right, we'll get the Dr. Patrick Slattery on the show. That's fine. He's a more than capable replacement for Dr. Duke. We'll get him on the show here in just a second. And, well, I said before, you can send your emails have already started to come in for David Duke. So you can start sending your emails in for Dr. Patrick Slattery instead. Okay? Patrick Slattery. He's terrific. He's terrific. All right. Well, yeah, you could put that on, I guess. Yeah. Well, the people want to know what you're doing here. I mean, it's you know, shit or get off the pot. Let's go, you know? All right. I'll do it. All right, so we'll play this. And in the meantime, I'm on my way to getting Patrick Slattery on the show with me, and he's coming on right after this. So, talk on microphone. There you go. All right, you got it. Yeah, okay. All right, so we started over kind of here. It's now 11 minutes after the hour, and pinch hitting for David Duke is a fine representative, I must say. It is Dr. Patrick Slattery, who's got his own radio show on the same broadcast affiliate that this show is heard on, the Republic Broadcasting Network. And Dr. Patrick Slattery is one of the most candid and forward-thinking, realistic thinkers that I'm aware of. He was on the show once previous. Didn't anticipate him coming on the show tonight, but as I say, Dr. Duke forgot about a prior engagement he had, and he said that we should get Patrick on the phone. I just gave Patrick a phone call, and thankfully he was agreeable to coming on the show on very short notice. And Dr. Slattery, I welcome you back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, and yourself?
Doing well. And first, I want to publicly acknowledge you coming on without any time. But Dr. David Duke sent me a text and said, I'm sorry, but to check in with Patrick Slattery, he'd be more than happy coming on your show. So I'm glad to have you back on.
Well, I'm glad to be back on, Patrick.
Yeah. So, where should we start, Dr. Slattery? There's so many things that we can get into. Let's start here. COVID being what it is, and maybe we can touch on that. I know you've got thoughts on myriad issues, but let's start here. Where do you think we stand right now with this? I don't know if it's a war. I don't know if it's a military exercise. I can't tell. There's very little footage, very little in the way of images and pictures and so on and so forth. But we are years now into this Ukraine-Russia-NATO conflict. And I still can't believe this thing is going on, but what are your most recent thoughts concerning this this whole kerfuffle over there?
Well, I have the feeling that 2023, this is the year we're going to see the Ukrainian government just collapse under the weight of not just, the Russian military, but its own corruption, the myriad of lies that have been spun around, fucky Ukraine and its heroic leader. And I think this is going to be a massive problem for the Jewish power structure that really pursued this war. You could say that the Russian army invaded Ukraine, but Russia was put in a position where they really had not a whole lot of choice, because the Ukraine was applying for NATO membership. They were also, Zelensky had just a few weeks prior to the invasion said that he was looking into reacquiring nuclear weapons. Ukraine actually possessed nuclear weapons for a short period of time upon the breakup of the Soviet Union, because they inherited part of the arsenal. NATO membership would put, even though Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia border on Russia, Ukraine has a massive border, and it goes way to the east. It gets really close to the Russian heartland. And given the behavior of the American government under its Jewish-dominated leadership, the behavior in recent decades, it would just be unacceptable. And of course, one can't fail to mention the 2014 coup in Ukraine that was perpetrated by the same people who run the State Department now, Victoria Nuland in particular.
Yeah.
And so I think that the State Department had this plot that was probably developed under the late Obama administration, late in the Obama administration, to push Russia into a war so that it could justify crippling economic sanctions. I mean, Ukraine would just be a sacrificial lamb, but the sanctions, it would be hoped, would lead a frustrated Russian public to overthrow their government. Well, that's failed, and Ukraine, not only is it a sacrificial pawn, but it's a pawn in a losing game. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing. It could sometime this year. It could be could be sooner, it could be later, but I think that's what we're going to see, and it's going to be a massive, well, as Ricky Ricardo would have said, you know, the American establishment's going to have a lot of splaining to do.
Well, you know, I agree with everything that you just said. The other thing that is not being spoken about, Patrick, particularly by those who have been conditioned to believe in this Russia bad, Putin bad, and, you know, we're all for Zelensky and, you know, continue to send him billions of dollars. And the hypocritical nature of this thing is what has struck me most right from the outset of this thing. And for those that are pulling for a dog in this fight, and if that dog happens to be NATO or Ukraine, the hypocritical nature of this mindset never fails to get me, because the one thing that I could, the most important thing to me that I see as far as this whole escapade is concerned is, if you are of the opinion that NATO should win this, or NATO's in the right, or Ukraine is in the right, then you also would have to say that you wouldn't mind if tomorrow China sets sail with nuclear weapons and missiles that they want to set up on the southern border in Mexico, or they want to bring them to Cuba, or they want to bring them north of the border and install them in Quebec with missiles that are pointed at American soil. There is not an American citizen alive today that would say this is fine and dandy. And what are our leaders? What is Biden going to do about this? You know, what is Congress going to do about this? You've got to act. We can't have these weapons of destruction pointed at American soil from such a close distance. Well, this is the analogy that I use, because that is the exact reason why, as we have seen over the last couple of decades, NATO encroachment going westward more and more, right to the point where they want to put missiles on the border between Ukraine and Russia. And what leader of any country, Putin or anyone else, would they not be being negligent if they did not say, hey, this is not all right for me, it's not all right for our people, it's not all right for our country. So, you know, if you continue to talk about putting missiles on the border, well, you're going to force our hand. He waited and waited and waited. Diplomacy didn't work, and then they finally acted. So the great hypocrisy of this whole thing is what speaks to me the most.
Right, and you mentioned he waited and waited and waited. And this coup d'etat was in February 2014. So he waited 8 years before he did anything about it. And during those 8 years, what was going on? Well, you had the Ukrainian military shelling these two regions of Lugansk and Donetsk, collectively known as the Donbass. You know, when imagine if you were in a country, it could be this country, and all of a sudden it's overthrown, or all of a sudden the government is overthrown with the aid of an outside party. And let's just say, what if it had been if our government was overthrown, you know, by Mexicans or Chinese or whatever, and they outlawed English? Because this is what happened. They effectively outlawed Russian. Russian was no longer to be an official language, one of the official languages of the country, and Russian education in schools was banned. And the thing is, you know, even people who identify as Ukrainian, an awful lot of them speak Russian. Zelensky didn't really learn Ukrainian until fairly recently. You know, so, but there was this massive anti-Russian, and it goes way beyond, you know, the language or the culture. They were shelling Donbass. They killed 14,000 people over these 8 years. You know, and so you talk about patience. And within Russia, if anything, Vladimir Putin is criticized for being too timid, for being too slow, for not being aggressive enough. Honestly, I mean, I think I think he's probably pursued, done the best he can. I don't, you know, I'm not saying he should have been more aggressive. Some people like Paul Craig Roberts have suggested he should be more aggressive. I think he's, you know, there's diplomacy, and there's not just diplomacy with the West or with Ukraine or with, there's also diplomacy with the countries that wound up being his allies, effective allies, economic allies, China in particular, but India and Pakistan and Indonesia. And if he had gone too hard, too fast, he wouldn't have had the sympathy of these countries. But now he does, because he's shown that he's not the aggressor. There was one other point I was going to make, but I'm sorry, I forgot.
That's okay. That's okay. It's Patrick Slattery. He's on the show here in hour number two, a political and social commentator, and has got his own show on Republic Broadcasting Network, just like this show here. If you got a question or a comment for Patrick, send it my way. It is ryanradioshow@gmail.com. That's ryanradioshow@gmail.com. How much of this, in your opinion, Patrick, has to do with Russia going their own way, refusing to westernize to the extent that much of the world has, refusing to be party to much of the immorality and the degradation that has taken over the society here in America and other parts around the world? And also, you would know better than I, in terms of monies in Russia, are they beholden to the same Jewish banking cartel that much of the world is, and America is?
Well, no, and certainly less so than ever because of the sanctions.
Well, then this is a problem, isn't it?
Well, it is. I think the policies that have been pursued by the State Department, first and foremost, the Jewish-run State Department, are completely backfiring on them. Russia has not gone along with homosexuality and trannyism. President Putin, he, if you listen to his New Year's address, he was talking about family values, something that Republicans used to talk about, family values. Do you remember that?
Sure.
But the way I look at it is, when the Soviet Union broke up, it had an economy that was based on state ownership of the means of production and central planning. And that was something that really didn't work very well. And so it needed to be replaced. And this is something that, the 20th century had seen a number of countries transform from a market economy to a state-run communist economy. But it hadn't seen the other way around. So nobody really knew how to best go about this. And the American Treasury Department sent over some Jews to help, some friendly Jews, or individuals who just happened to be Jewish, like Jeffrey Sachs, who nowadays is like the voice of reason, but Jeffrey Sachs, Lawrence Summers, who later became Secretary of Treasury, some others. And under Sachs's plan, they had this what they called shock therapy, where they had a very sudden privatization of the economy. Well, guess what? Who was in a position to benefit from privatization? Who was in a position to purchase shares of these newly privatized state enterprises? Well, people who had overseas connections to capital. In other words, Russian Jews. And so you had a Jewish takeover of the economy. You had the rise of these 13 or so Jewish oligarchs who controlled the valuable parts of the economy. So they controlled mining and energy and communications and banking. And they ran roughshod throughout the 1990s. The Russian people themselves, the Russian male life expectancy plunged by about 7 years, and it was never that long in the first place. And people were freezing to death. People were cold and hungry. And the place was a mess. And Boris Yeltsin, under whose administration this took place, Boris Yeltsin was extremely unpopular. He had to fake one election in 1996 because the communist candidate did win the election, but was cheated out of it. And in 2000, it was obvious they weren't even going to be able to cheat enough to keep Boris Yeltsin in office. They needed to find somebody else, and they went through one prime minister after another. Finally, came to this unknown Vladimir Putin. He became prime minister and managed to get a lot of popularity by taking a really tough stand on Chechen terrorism. Some people say it involved false flaggery. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But at any rate, he was able to hang on and save the day for the oligarchs, and then he turned on them. And this is the thing. He turned on them, and the most powerful ones he went after first. Once he put Khodorkovsky in prison, he chased Berezovsky out of the country. others, and then the ones who remained, they cried uncle, and they had their political power taken away from them in order to keep their little economic fiefdoms. So it's not as if Russia was devoid of Jewish power, but it had been tamed. But the thing is, the diaspora Jews who run the United States, they could not abide by that, and so there's been a vendetta to get them, and that's what this war is all about, in my opinion.
You know, you just mentioned two words that should be obvious: Jewish power. And I'm criticized by some, so are you, and so many others, you know, who have tried to open eyes to the domination, the influence of Jewish control in virtually all sectors of business and industry in this country and many other places around the world. This, despite overwhelming evidence that should smack any skeptic in the face, many still refuse to acknowledge what should be so obvious to one and all. Do you find yourself, after years of being involved in this and trying to open eyes and trying to educate people, do you find yourself incredulous when you consider this this Jewish power that people refuse to acknowledge?
Well, I mean, it's frustrating and it's tiresome. You know, Dr. Duke will just recite lists of names. He'll talk about the owners of the New York Times, the big media companies. You know, I will recite six out of really the most powerful seven cabinet positions: Secretary of State Blinken, Secretary of Treasury Yellen, Attorney General Merrick Garland, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, who's a Jew, Ron Klain, who's the outgoing chief of staff, and now you got this incoming chief of staff, Jeffrey Zients, both Jewish, and then Avril Haines, the director of national intelligence. The only out of the seven most important positions, the only one that's not held by a Jew is held by the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin.
And you're just mentioning, and Patrick, you're just mentioning the political sphere, which of course, but you know, you're talking about Hollywood, entertainment, sports, academia. I mean, the list goes on. They're involved and control and influence virtually everything. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Well, no, but that's the point. So, I mean, I was just talking about our cabinet, but you could go into the Hollywood companies, you could go into the big tech companies, you could look at, and they might not, in, you know, some areas they might not be a majority, but still they have an effective veto in most areas of life and of American public life, and most importantly, they're able to implement this taboo on discussion of Jewish power. And if you discuss Jewish power, you get smacked down.
Right.
And you look at Kanye West, who's gone rogue, and he was the richest black man apparently in the history of the world. He had billions of dollars, $2 or $3 billion, and now he's former billionaire Kanye West. And there's a question over whether he even has a positive net value at this point. They just, in a matter of weeks, they took everything from him. What does that say about Jewish power? If you mention Jewish power, you have everything taken away from you, even if you're the richest black man in the world. What does that say? You know, this is but they're able to implement it. But on the other hand, I think they're very, very vulnerable because they can only maintain this power if they can maintain the taboo. And we see how easily the taboo could be broken. They had to circle the wagons, and I don't think they've completely repaired it. Kanye West is quiet right now. He may well come back. And you saw some other blacks, not so many whites, but you saw some other blacks who started talking about Jewish power. NBA player Kyrie Irving and Jason Whitlock, who's the commentator on Tucker Carlson's show,
right,
and a few others. And, you know, blacks have been put on this kind of pedestal where they're a little bit more protected than whites. They have a little more freedom than whites. Whites have been demoralized, and, you know, it was really kind of shameful that so few whites, whites in the public sphere, were able to come to Kanye's defense. But I think they're very vulnerable for that reason, and also because some of these hoaxes that they've been perpetrating are going to be exposed. The hoax that Ukraine is winning. Every time I turn on my computer and it boots up and I get a blast of Microsoft News, it's saying that Putin is dying of cancer. He's trying to take people with him. It says that he's missing and they're on the verge of civil war. And these things aren't going to happen.
Well, I think, you know, it's an interesting psychology when you think about it. I talk about it often here on my show whenever I turn in this direction. I'm convinced that, you know, being awake to all of this stuff, as I have become over the years, as you have been for a long time, and many others who consider this, I think that, in fact, I know that a lot of people refuse to go down these rabbit holes to explore so many of these things, which with factual evidence can be shown to be true, that a lot of these people don't want to do this because they know that if they go down these roads and they uncover some things that have never been a part of their mindset before, it will somehow make them feel a little dirty, that they'll feel that they're anti-Semitic or racist or however you want to sum it up. So they refuse to go down these roads because they don't want to, they're terrified at what they might find. But let me ask you this. I'll play devil's advocate, get your response to this. So the person that's listening to our show is hearing us talk about Jewish influence and Jewish domination of many sectors of industry and business. And they say, well, so what? You know what? They managed to put themselves in those positions. They were smarter. They did it with more finesse. It just shows you the typical IQ of the Jew, which is higher than your average goyim out there. So, you know, deal with it. If it was Irish people that were running the media or Italian people that were running academia, or, you know, you deal with it. So what's the big deal as far as Jewish power and Jewish control?
Okay, well, for one thing, you know, there's the issue of Jewish power, but then there's also the issue of what are they doing with it? And if they were just smart and they were good at administering government and running businesses, and that's that, maybe it would be, oh, so what? Who cares if they're doing a good job? But what are they doing with that power? And you look around, what are they doing with that power? Well, for instance, they're flooding the United States with random people from all over the world. Why? Because they want to turn white Americans into a minority. This is clear. It's not for voters for the Democratic Party. Nobody cares about the Democratic Party. The Jewish power has captured the Republican Party as much as they want. They can manipulate either party. So it's not about the Democratic Party. But they're flooding with they do want to turn whites into a minority, and one of the aspects of it is by flooding the country with immigrants. Another is by repressing birth rates, white birth rates in particular, with homosexuality and trannyism, which obviously anybody can become a homosexual or a tranny, but in a society where your position in the society, where your status is so much a function of your victimhood. White men are not considered anybody's victim. White straight men aren't. The only way to get on that totem pole of victimhood is by being gay or tranny. And so that's another aspect of it. Also the promotion of black men as the ideal mate. And, you know, you walk around and you see all these white women with their mulatto children or mulatto grandchildren. There is this concerted effort. You know, how much of, I'm not saying people actually get in a room and they plan these things out, but this is the way it's working, and it's working this way because, you know, when you peel the onion back, you see Jewish power at work. You know, if you look at the, I was talking about the homosexuality and the trannyism, and you go back and you look at the, well, for instance, the nonprofit organizations behind this, like the Human Rights Campaign, and you see, oh, a Jewish executive director, a lot of Jewish money coming into it. How much of a role did the media, which is Jewish dominated, how much of a role did they play in it? And you look at, you know, people like Jon Stewart, who had The Daily Show, Jon Stewart Leibowitz. Very, very influential in this whole legalization of gay marriage. You see it over and over. In fact, Joe Biden himself, a few years ago, went before, was he vice president or was he a former vice president? But he went before a Jewish group and said, thank you for all the work you did legalizing gay marriage. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have gay marriage. He said that. And they I think some of them were like, hey, don't talk so loud. But, you know, Joe foot in the mouth Biden. I mean, he's got his foot in his mouth, but at least you know where he stands. He doesn't have a filter. He blurts things out. And it's true. And, you know, you can look at policy after policy after policy, and all these policies have been really, really detrimental to normal people in general, white people in particular. And what's been the result? Since you've had this rise of Jewish power, we've gone from being, you know, white people have gone from being, you know, 85-87% of the population to the point where, if you're talking about children, white children are a minority of the child population.
Yeah.
And if children, and that means we are headed to a majority non-white state, we've pretty much lost the country.
Well, everything that your typical white man or white woman out there that they rail against, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like this agenda, I don't like this piece of propaganda, I don't like this popularizing the lifestyle, if you want to talk about homosexuality, lesbianism, and so on. I don't like this. It's shoved down my face. I don't like this Negro worship at unprecedented levels, the race mixing, which is part and parcel of virtually every other commercial that you watch these days. They're not selling so much products and services as much as they're selling an idea, an agenda in my mind. It's insulting. It's far-fetched. It doesn't have what is depicted on television today, particularly with commercials, but you can also throw shows in there on Netflix and HBO and all the networks out there. All of these don't have anything to do with reality. And as far as the race mixing is concerned, you would think that every other white woman out there, if you watch television, if you've never been to planet Earth before, but you arrived yesterday and you went through 24 hours of television, you would think that every other white woman out there or every other white man out there is married to or is dating a black person. And this has nothing to do with reality. So like I say, Patrick, they're not selling products and services anymore with these commercials. They're selling ideas. They're selling propaganda. They're selling mind altering sorts of concepts. And but again, go back. Who's behind all of this? It certainly is not the stupid goyim out there, although a lot of them buy into this bullshit. But who's fronting this? Who's pushing this? Who's creating and implementing all of these ideas and these things which are trying to totally overturn society and get people to think in new ways? Jewish people, Jewish power control.
And, you know, it sounds like conspiratorial, but this is actually very well documented. There is, you know, I don't say that there is a group of learned elders of Zion who meet in rooms and issue orders and directives, and you've got, you know, some sort of secret chain of command that carries it out. But you do have a process within the Jewish establishment for... you know, for discussing policy,
yeah.
For discussing policy, debating, and reaching broad consensus. And you see it, it's in newspapers. Some of them are newspapers everybody reads. Some are, there's publications that are only for Jews. You've got these scholarly journals. Some are that specifically for Jews. You know, you got Tablet Magazine, you've got Commentary, so you have these things, and then there's probably a lot of less formal, there's less formal structures as well. But they arrive at these consensuses, and you can actually document. There's a paper trail. David Duke has a lot of this in his book. Kevin McDonald in Culture of Critique, among others, they've done a very good job of actually documenting this paper trail of a Jewish agenda. You can identify a Jewish agenda, and it doesn't mean that every Jew or every powerful Jew buys into all aspects of it. But there are these broad consensuses on immigration. Mass immigration is a Jewish priority. Promotion of homosexuality and now trannyism is a Jewish priority. Sowing of white guilt, the promotion of, I don't use the term race mixing, for whatever reason, but of the promotion of the black man as the ideal mate for the white woman. And, you know, it's socially engineered. You hardly ever saw this 20 years ago. And now it's, if you're in a Walmart, you see it all over. It's socially engineered. It wasn't natural. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And with the case of the, the black men and the white women, it's not simply indoctrination, but there's been the divorce of raising children from, you know, there's been this divorce of creating families from sexuality. So, you just have sex and you get pregnant. Maybe you have the baby, maybe you don't. The man doesn't need to be involved in the raising of the children, and financial support can be had from the government. And single mothers are heroes. Single mothers, there's this cult of the single mother now, which is also bizarre. And so that's what we're talking about.
Well, it's on one hand, people like yourself and me and so many others have tried to talk about this and to enlighten people as to what's going on. You mentioned Kanye West before. It is, as you said, you noted that it's, you know, we can talk about everything and anyone, Patrick, but we cannot talk about Zionism. We cannot talk about Jewish control and power. We cannot talk about Jewish influence. It is, as you said, and as I say many times, it is taboo. This, more than anything, should be a red flag to so many people who are maybe a little bit skeptical concerning this kind of stuff. But I don't know if I like to feel, unfortunately, I say this, that that control has taken root at such deep levels at this point that I don't think that there's any way out of this unless something, you know, miraculous occurs, or, you know, some sort of a watershed moment that really changes the minds of so many people. Because the history books and the newspapers and the television shows and the commercials are all made by that very concerted web of people that we've been talking about that continue to forward these various agendas that we're speaking of. And they have brainwashed so many people over the years. It's been a generational thing. And I want to add to what you just said, I'm not saying that this involves every single Jewish person that's out there, but for anyone to seriously argue that this is not a well-concocted plan, that it is not engineered, that is something that is not something that is just, you know, it hasn't happened by accident, you know. For anybody to argue this and look themselves in the mirror and say, no, I'm being honest with myself. I think that, you know, people like myself and you and so many others that, you know, we're wearing tinfoil hats, or, you know, we're so tied up in conspiracy theories that we can't see straight. This is obvious. It's matter of fact. And there's no way of getting around any of this stuff as far as I'm concerned. And I think it's taken root to the extent, Pat, that I'm not sure we can overturn this, at least not in our lifetimes.
Well, I do think there are vulnerabilities. And I think there is an awful lot of hubris in the Jewish power structure. The thing about Jews, which I think is certainly unique in our age, in our modern times, is that they feel they need to control the world. They really do. You know, you can look historically, and Alexander the Great might have wanted to conquer the world, and maybe Genghis Khan wanted to conquer the world. But in the modern times, for the most part, people have given up on that idea. But Jews, for a variety of reasons, I think some Jews have this religious idea that God created the Goyim to serve the Jews, you know, and some of them talk about it. The Chabad the chief rabbi of Israel, the chief Sephardic rabbi, Rabbi Yosef, he would talk about that. And, you can see that amongst some of them. And there's others, maybe you feel that they're doing tikkun olam, that the Jews are supposed to be the guiding light and they're supposed to save the world for the Gentiles, for everybody. You know, it's nice, it's good. And then there are others who look at the Holocaust and think, oh, my God, if we're not in control, they're going to Holocaust us again. So, I mean, for a variety of reasons, but you really do have this Jews feeling they need to control the world. And right now, they control a big hunk of the world. They control the most powerful country, the United States. They control Europe. They don't control Russia. They don't control China. There are some places kind of indirectly, Japan and South Korea, kind of indirectly under control.
Let me interject. They control large parts of the world, including this country here. They don't control Russia, you said. They don't control China, you said. Gee whiz.
Right.
Isn't it kind of funny that we're told that, you know what, we're supposed to be anti-Russian and anti-Chinese, two of the countries that they don't have their hooks into yet.
Yeah, I stand with the Ruskies and I stand with the slanty-eyed Chinamen. I say that because I think it's funny. Maybe nobody's laughing. But no, those aren't our enemies. They're not our problem.
No.
And they're not trying to take over the world.
Nope.
The United States was never about taking over the world. We've only been trying to run the world and be the only superpower in recent decades.
Could you imagine if China or Russia had as many military, hundreds upon hundreds of military outposts throughout the world? Oh, you know, as we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, no, and they don't. And we do. And we do post-World War II. And that was a big watershed. You know, in the 1800s, we had Manifest Destiny. Did that mean we wanted to take over the world? No. The Manifest Destiny stopped at the Pacific Ocean. It was, you know, we should control the middle latitudes of North America from sea to shining sea. That's as far as it went. And even after World War One, when we were the preeminent economic power on the world, what did we even join the League of Nations? We didn't. We didn't become the world's reserve currency. We didn't do these things between the two wars. It wasn't until after World War II, and in World War II, there was a great deal of, you know, a great rise in Jewish power after World War II. And, you know, you can look at world power, at Jewish power in the United States, but also look at it in the wake of the Russian Revolution. And you had, in the wake of the Russian Revolution, which was largely a Jewish revolution, not exclusively, but largely, predominantly, you could say. But in the 1920s, in the Politburo, you had a Jewish faction led by Trotsky that literally wanted to take over the world. They thought you could only have a communist revolution if it's worldwide. And then you had the non-Jewish faction led by Bukharin and Stalin that were trying to pursue socialism in one country. They weren't trying to take over the world. In our lifetimes, the only movements, the only people trying to take over the world are Jewish ones. And Hitler wasn't trying to take over the world. Putin's not trying to take over the world.
Right.
He's not even trying to recreate the old Soviet Union. He's not. And I think there's been so much hubris, and I think they've really been... what is it? Biting off more than they can chew? They've gone too far with, you know, the corona thing. There's going to be backlash over that. I think there's going to be a lot of backlash, and then they're going to really be taken down a few notches by this Ukraine thing, because Russia's going to win militarily, and China and Russia together, but China probably even more so, are going to they're going to be the center of a new economic system.
Well, it's also, you know, we talk about all of these things. It's also becoming increasingly easier, would you agree, to propagate minds, influence people, and brainwash people, because the average person today in this country, anyway, seems to have the amount of time on their hands to really do nothing else other than, you know, watch television and get on TikTok and Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, they're just not locked in. They're not tuned into what's going on, and so they're more vulnerable to believing that establishment narrative probably now than maybe any other time in history.
We're certainly living in a critical juncture, and you know what you say is very important, and it's ironic because just a few years ago you heard people saying that because of the internet, because of the new technology, this is what was going to free us, because we're able to propagate our points of view in ways that we couldn't. We didn't have those venues before. But at the same time, the means of tracking us, our every movement, I mean, all of us carry these cell phones, and the cell phone companies, they have to know where we are in order to route the calls to us, And that's just the beginning. I mean, all our browsing history, all of this stuff, all of our financial transactions, everything. I mean, they don't even need the digital currency. All that, all our credit card transactions, all these transactions, which in the past, you know, it was just too much information for them to actually assemble and handle. But now they can. They can track us and surveil us in ways that, you know, the Stalin or Soviet era KGB could only dream of.
Do you look at all of these things that we contend with on a day in and day out basis, the problems, the walls, the different things that we've got to contend with? Do you look at these, and you've been talking about these things for a very long time, and are you at the point, or have you been at the point where these are things that you consider to be blockades and big problems, or are these new opportunities to open people's eyes? And based upon your experiences and talking with people and your different correspondences and just your general instinctive feel for what's going on, do you believe that we're at a moment in time where things are changing? Some people are becoming wise to things that they have ignored in the past, or do you believe that these are going to continue to be stumbling blocks and it's going to be one hell of a battle to continue to exist on a day in and day out basis?
I think things can go either way at this point. You know, if you were to turn the clock back 8 years to, say, 2015, they probably could, when I say they, I mean, there probably could have just been a slow-go approach, like, you know, slowly boiling the frog. And if they had been patient and just waited a few more decades, everything, you know, in demographically and in all other aspects of control, they could have gotten their objective. I think they got freaked out by a little bit by Brexit, but in particularly the election of Donald Trump. They got freaked out and they decided to, when I say they, I think there's always been kind of a bit of a conflict or a debate between the go slow people and the go fast people. And it's been pedal to the metal since the election of Donald Trump. And there's great risk with that. You know, they're trying to wrap up the game as fast as possible, but there's great risks involved with that. And, you know, they've been flooding our country with illegal aliens like never before and legal foreigners like never before. Everything's accelerating. We're closer to World War III than ever before. But there's great risk with that. And, I think a lot of people who would not have become aware of what's going on, everything is so bizarre now that they are looking for explanations. Now, the thing is, there's a whole industry, I would say cottage industry, but it's a massive industry, spinning narratives that avoid Jewish power. You know, so everything is, you know, it's the Illuminati or it's the Chinese or it's corporate power, or it's the military-industrial complex or anything besides Jewish power. So there's all these, you know, Chomskyism, there's all of these alternative explanations, but a lot of people are stumbling onto it. Last thing I want to say is that right now our country, and probably the world, but certainly our country, it's on fire. We're on fire. And we've just got to try to put it out. And what it's going to look like when we put it out, what rooms are going to be salvageable, what rooms have to be torn down, what's going to be repairable, who knows? We just got to put it out now. And trying to figure out exactly, you know, some people talk about, well, these states have to break away or these people have to be expelled or this or that. I think that can be putting the cart in front of the horse. We just got to put out the fire right now. And, you know, we may have to leave it to the next generation to figure out actually how to rebuild or how to deal with the remnants of our country.
Well, we do live in interesting times. There's no question about that. Patrick, I want to thank you again for coming on such short notice for David Duke. And it's always great catching up with you. You are one of the clear thinkers and one of the most realistic thinkers that I've become aware of over the years. And I know you've got your own radio show and you're also on with David quite a few times. We feel fortunate and privileged to have you on board the show with us tonight. And again, I thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick.
Okay, thanks. Take care. There we go. That's Patrick Slattery. Your Patrick Slattery, huh? On your Patrick Ryan show. on this Tuesday. This show is supported by its vigorous and enthusiastic, passionate supporters on the front page of the very website you're on right now. There are easy ways, safe and secure ways, by which you may donate to this show, and we thank you in advance. I said we thank you in advance for your consideration in making a donation to this here show. One man, one microphone. Here there's no rules. Independent, fearlessly independent. There was something I wanted to say before I got off the air. Yeah. I'll remember it for the show tomorrow. And we come back tomorrow, God willing, do it all over again on a Wednesday edition, rendition, and episode of this here show, The Patrick Ryan Show, with me, Patrick Ryan. And if you want to email the show, stay in touch. Love hearing from you, ryanradioshow@gmail.com, ryanradioshow@gmail.com. Until tomorrow, again, God willing, I'm Patrick Ryan. This is The Patrick Ryan Show on patrickryanshow.com and the Republic Broadcasting Network.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.